1914. Hers was the happily ever after love of fairy tales and dreams come true. He was tall, movie star handsome, and an aviator in Britain's Royal Flying Corps. In the 2 years he had courted her, she could think of none other. Back then, she had a flawless complexion, long wavy red hair, a tall, fashionably full figure, and a plan to be his wife forever. Even then, he was hardly ever comfortable with her touch or talk of the future, but she steadfastly refused to admit that her husband believed the commitment of marriage was less about eternity and more about the companionship of an eternally attractive wife. "Promise me you'll always be beautiful," she later wrote in a novel, mimicking Archie's words. Determined to be ever available to her husband, she never allowed him to see her writing, not that he had shown any interest. He was so structured, so utterly obsessed with his fledgling investment career, that any hope she had once held of rating a passing smile or a compliment had been dimmed in the shadow of his neglect. As 1 year followed another, Archie showed less and less interest in her, often spending nights at his club in London and weekends on the golf course. She wanted his touch, needed his attention, yet the more she tried to draw him close, the harder he pulled away. All the while, she quietly produced one book, and then the next, and the next. With her meagre royalties bolstering the family's finances, which at the time were barely adequate. "Now it has come to this," she thought, looking back at the too quiet room. She felt movement at her feet, and reached down to stroke her beloved wire-haired terrier, Peter, as he repositioned himself to lick the back of her hand. She barely felt his moist, warm tongue, her mind muted, as if shrouded in layers of cotton wool, unable to command itself to think. Still, she needed to finish quickly now and leave before logic and reason shattered her plan. After removing her wedding ring, Agatha placed it inside a small mahogany box on the desk, where she was certain it would be discovered. She stood and crept toward the door, lowering her head as if embarrassed and never slowing until she reached her daughter's room. Inside, she watched silently as Rosalind exhaled rhythmic breath in a cadence of peaceful sleep. She then kissed her child on the forehead, as she did every night, just as her own mother had done with her. It was only as she left the room that she allowed herself to remember the smell of her mother's violet cologne as her face drew near. Agatha wiped away the tears summoned by the memory. 8 months earlier, everything had been so different. Then Agatha's mother, Clara, was still alive, living in Ashfield, the family's estate in Torquay. Her mother would have known what to do. Clara had a way of always knowing what was right. Yet the suddenness of her mother's death in April 1926, at the age of 72, fueled a depression that left Agatha bereft of joy and spirit. A grey wash of numbness was her only comfort. "Sometimes one feels so eager to get out of this body," her mother had told her during one of her frequent illnesses near the end. "One longs to be released from this prison." Suddenly Agatha understood. Archie was no help in times of sadness. He was awkward around grief and had, in fact, a violent dislike of illness, death, and trouble of any kind. In place of compassion, Archie made jokes. At the time of Clara's death, he suggested travelling, a vacation in Spain. It would be fun, he said. It would distract. Distract? Agatha didn't want distraction. "I wanted to be with my sorrow and get used to it," she said. Leaving her husband in London, she drove herself to Torquay, 3 hours away, dreading the chore of closing a house.